Hello and welcome to Connections here on this Thursday. A little bit snowy here and icy. I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Bill Newell is here. Josh Arnold is here. And kind of a slippery morning out there where we are. How is it where you are, Bill?
It's all right. Doesn't seem too bad.
Okay. Yeah, same here. A little bit of, looks like we got about 2 or 3 inches maybe, and then rain on top of that. So I think the thing is you better get out there and move whatever is left today, because it's supposed to drop down to very cold temps tonight and be very cold tomorrow. So that's all going to turn to ice, according to the old weather forecaster here. Bill, this is kind of, a strange week in politics locally and nationally and so on. Where would you like to start? What are your views on how this thing has gone so far?
Well, I guess naturally we're still coming off that New Hampshire primary. We're still then we have the Nevada caucuses in another week or so. Then the Super Tuesday, then South Carolina, then Super Tuesday, March 3rd. So yeah, I guess talked about 2 days ago was Elizabeth Warren's performance. Obviously, it'd be very interesting to see what she does moving forward. Looks like she's scrapping South Carolina, going to Nevada. But it does open up, you know, who knows what happens on Super Tuesday. I'm sure everybody's in until today to see what happens, because you have, 15 different, states, or jurisdictions, voting on Super Tuesday. Again, March 3rd, that would include Massachusetts. Maine and Vermont and New England would be doing that. Then you've got California. Josh, I think that's the first time they've gone up to Super Tuesday, unless it happened 4 years ago. I can't remember. They used to be much later in the process.
Yeah.
But they're now Super Tuesday, so you got California, and you also have North Carolina, Texas, Minnesota, sort of some bellwether states as well, sort of. So, and Virginia is on Super Tuesday, so it'll be interesting. That'll be the big day, and we'll see what happens. And there's a lot happening, too many things going on to discuss them all. But I don't know what your take was, Josh, after Tuesday.
Well, I was interested to watch and listen to some of the commentators talk about the who drew from who, and they went back to Clinton and Barack Obama campaigns, when Clinton had South Carolina all sewed up until Barack Obama came along and people saw that he could be a winner, and he carried South Carolina, and the rest, as they say, is history. People are looking at Sanders, and while they haven't historically been strong with the minority communities, some of the commentators feel that, gee, you know, Biden's got to do well. He's got to pull a first-place finish in both South Carolina and Nevada to really get even with the rest of the crowd.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was thinking of this the other day. You know, I hear people say, the Republicans are hoping that it's Bernie Sanders. Well, you know, I'm not so sure about that, because he has a following. But yet, on the other hand, you know, I was a little surprised at the Sanders performance in a way. He gets 25% in New Hampshire with a crowded field, don't get me wrong. But 4 years ago, he got, 60% and kind of thumped Hillary Clinton in a two-person race. So he, in a way, you could say he's way down. You know, and another thing, too, is the economy. You know, you get all these polls about people feeling the economy is better. There's a ton of polls out now about that piece. And I do remember 4 years ago, people were really worried about the economy. And I always cite, because I've traveled across upstate New York different times, and that was riddled with industry years ago, and it's all gone. I mean, you go to these towns in upstate New York, and all the factories are closed. You know, it's just a different lifestyle. And Bernie Sanders is very appealing to those kinds of people. And I'm not sure the economy is as bad now as it was 4 years ago. So I wonder if that played out and that had any impact on that New Hampshire vote and those vote totals.
Well, you know, there's that old saying that Ronald Reagan had in 1980, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And that's the barometer that seems to get thrown out there every year, every 4 years when we have a presidential race. And I guess the Republicans are certainly hoping that the people will use that as a yardstick. I saw some really interesting energy among the Sanders and Buttigieg campaigns and Klobuchar. So I'm looking to see what, you know, not all of those people have a national campaign or the money to go a big national campaign. But anything can happen, and I think it's still fairly wide open. I don't think that there is a front runner. And Biden's right. Yeah, well, those are the first two states, but they're not representative of the other 48. And they're not.
Yeah.
They're representative of certain levels of certain categories of voters, but not all of them.
Yeah.
Bill?
And you're right. You're right, Josh. And I don't, you know, we may not even have a consensus after Super Tuesday as well. Different states kind of, you know, and I believe the other thing too is there's not the winner take all pieces to the primaries that they're used to, that there have been in other states at other times. Where, you know, once you have somebody emerge, then you have a primary, and, you know, people coalesce behind, let's say it's one candidate. Well, you know, in the past, some of these states, I know that it was the GOP side 4 years ago, they become winner-take-alls. And so, you know, getting delegates was a little bit easier once you become the front-runner. But you remember, now think back here, 4 years ago, remember now, you know, later on in the process, it was Donald Trump hiring Paul Manafort. Why? Because he could count delegates and would be important at a convention. So even you know, 4 years ago, there was that threat of a kind of a brokered convention over on the Republican side, and now the Democratic rules are more in line with that kind of piece. So, you know, it could very well happen. And how interesting would that be?
Well, it remains to be seen, and it's coming up fast, as you guys have been pointing out. Bill, we have to talk a little bit about what's coming up here today in our program. I neglected to do that at the beginning, and I don't know why, but Valentine's Day is tomorrow, and I know that you'll be talking to a couple of people about that. And I think Josh and I might kick that around later on, and I might give you a jingle back, too, because I have some questions about that. I'll ask you about your interview coming up in a second. I'll be talking with Amber Gomnitz of the Gloucester Hawk program. There's a program taking place today that we'll talk about later on in detail, called 1 Billion Rising, and there is a ceremony taking place in Gloucester today reflecting that. We'll also have an in-depth interview with Amber Gomnitz of Gloucester Hawk, and you've got an interview coming up.
Yeah, Paula Curley from the Director of Nutrition for the Senior Care Program is going to talk to us about a fundraiser they have tomorrow at the Gloucester House, and the benefits of the Meals on Wheels, and she'll have some interesting things to share.
And what about Dr. Sapphire?
Dr. Sapphire, Superintendent of Schools in Gloucester, who will be retiring at the end of this year, will be our guest also.
All right, very good. And Bill?
And just a quick note, Anthony Migliaccio from Salvi the Florist will be joining us. Man, they are so busy right now, and you may be surprised at my take. I like Valentine's Day, but I think it's because, you know, when else do you get a chance to give flowers or for people to receive flowers? It's great for the florist, obviously, but also candy. You know, after that, I mean, I guess it is a racket. The cards are very expensive. I get that piece, but it is kind of a nice holiday.
All right. More on that later on. Bill, thanks. I might check in with you later on if you're available.
All right. Love you guys.
Yeah, well, you can't have my bud. Take care, Bill. Bud Light, I guess it is. All right. So we got that coming up. First interview here in just a second with Dr. Sapphire. He is the superintendent of schools in Gloucester. Plenty more today. So stay with us.
Street, a great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the
the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan, plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Looking to score big on your savings this season? Open a CD savings or money market account at Institution for Savings. This is the perfect time to earn funds for your future, and our rates are among the best. Stop by one of our offices in Amesbury, Beverly, Boxford, Gloucester, Hamilton, Ipswich, Middleton, Newburyport, Rockport, Rowley, Salem, Salisbury, and Topsfield. Or visit us online at institutionforsavings.com. Member FDIC, DIF. North Shore Today is MSO News Sports daily local news podcast with news from all around the North Shore. The Post also shares a note on the weather, local photos, notices, and our video of the day. Check it out daily, North Shore Today. This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Welcome back to Connections. Our first guest is Dr. Richard Sapphire, the superintendent of schools in Gloucester. Dr. Sapphire, welcome to the program.
Why, hi. How are you, Josh? Nice to hear from you.
Great. Listen, you've given your notice. You're going to run off into the sunset and retire, enjoy all the things that retirement has. Yeah, it's been a good run for you. You've been here several years, and that's exceptional, not just what you've done, but that you lasted that long, and not that Gloucester's that bad that you wouldn't last, but the average lifespan of a superintendency hasn't been high in Massachusetts the last couple of decades. What do you attribute your success to here?
Oh, well, first, thank you very much. I think that what has given me confidence is both working and living in the community. I've been here and living in Gloucester since 1978. All of my jobs were out of town until I saw the ad in the newspaper for the superintendency here in Gloucester. So being a part of it, both as a resident and in an official appointed capacity, getting involved in the public and civic concerns along with the educational process, that's something that has kept me focused, and I think that focus has served me well.
Question, based on what you just said, you know, in some communities, you can live in one community and commute to someplace else to be the superintendent or to be a district officer. Is that more a function of other communities and less for Gloucester, do you think? Would it work as well for somebody who had to truck in here from Medford or Somerville every day? Or is there almost an expectation that if you live elsewhere, you're going to move here?
Two issues. I think maybe 25, 30 years ago, it was almost expected that if you were a superintendent, you lived in the community, and certainly that is not the case today. It is, I think, what is paramount is that when they talk about fit, you're talking about an affinity that that the community, the school committee, the school department has a sense of who the individual is, and equally, if not more importantly, whether you live in the community or not, that you have and or develop a quick sense for the values of that community, for the culture of that community. So you want to hire somebody who's astute in identifying, you know, the levers, the leverage, the way things work, how and what people understand. And if any community finds that person, then they should hire them.
Yeah. English and Black, was it Dwight Fenwick and or Fenwick English and Dwight Black in one of their books wrote about the issue, the legend of the chairs, and they talked about in school systems, the old guard, if you will. You started out as maybe a history teacher, or you were assistant football coach, and then you went on to become a department head, and eventually the assistant principal, principal, and then an assistant superintendent, and eventually superintendent. And there were all of these steps. It was like a well-worn path, and said, you know, it's the only profession where that happens. You know, he said if you took and applied that to the medical community, you'd start out as a scrub nurse and an attendant in the operating room and work your way up to surgeon. But it's not like that now for superintendents. People come from all different focuses, and there isn't that. What are you seeing in terms of what's out there for people, whether it's for a principalship or people who are the budding superintendents of tomorrow?
Yeah. No, well, I consider myself very fortunate to have had this circumstance to work and live in the town, and it goes well beyond having a very short commute, which yeah. was kind of helpful as well. But again, the individual needs to have a particular skill set and needs to know how to listen to people, how to form coalitions, how to work with others, how to demonstrate leadership and shared leadership, and you know, it all really comes with a, you know, a sense of understanding and learning on the job at the same time. Based upon supply and demand, there's no guarantee these days that somebody who's going to get hired for a position is going to come from that area, and the expectation that they're necessarily going to move to that area isn't really part of the process either. With that said, this particular position means you're going to be spending a heck of a lot of time in the district in which you work, so it really...
It benefits if you live here and you don't have to drive an hour home, yeah.
Yeah, whether you like it or not, it becomes your second home, and if it doesn't, then, you know, you're not doing your job.
What, looking back at where things were when you took over for Christopher Farmer and where they are now, what do you point to as the progress that Gloucester's seen?
Yes. Well, we've made our strongest strides have been made at the particularly at the elementary level. When I came on board, a lot of the schools and their particular programs and literacy and math, et cetera, were going in different kinds of directions as people were trying to figure out how to make things work, how to supplement what they had. One of the strengths of what we, I think, have accomplished in this time is to create a unified system, a systematic approach to literacy and to math. And we brought in some consultants, which helped us to shape the way in which we go about our teaching and instruction, and we made very significant strides, particularly at the elementary level. At one point, statewide, we were around the 36th percentile for our elementary schools, and now we're at the 58th percentile, and we did that within a short space of around 5 years. So I'd say that was one of our bigger strengths.
How much, what are some of the other, in terms of the budget, collective bargaining agreements, consolidation of resources, how has that gone in the time you've been here, and where do we stand now?
When I first came on board, and I came in on May 16th, 2011, then they were right in the heart of the budget process. I sort of parachuted in. And that was a year where there were very significant cuts. I think there were, across the board, there were approximately 40 positions, not just teaching, but paras and food service, and you name it, there were about 40 positions cut. Over the course of 8 or 9 budgets or so, the number of cuts have been absolutely minimal, especially over the last couple of years. So I think we have stabilized the budget. We have brought things like co-teaching, which means more special education teachers in places like Veterans Elementary School where the work is needed. And we're going to be, and I believe, in a reasonably comfortable position to make some additional requests for next year as well, because of the extent to which we've stabilized the budget relative to what we feel that the city can legitimately apportion to the schools and remain fiscally responsible to the rest of the city as well.
One of the issues that's fluid now is the notion of a new elementary school to replace the 1949 East Gloucester Elementary School. And I know a lot has gone into that, and it's fluid in the sense that, gee, there's a move upfront to have Meadows Field declared surplus property and to come up with a new Meadows Field, and then to hopefully build at the Meadows Field location the new school. Tell us where that is now, and if any thoughts about how successful or difficult that's going to be in the days, weeks, and months ahead.
Right, right. We need a new school. East Gloucester in particular is in dire shape. It has to be replaced. The economy of scale encourages us, as did the MSBA, to consider consolidating a couple of schools, and Veterans Memorial is not far behind East Gloucester. It is ultimately less expensive to build a slightly larger school of 440 students than it is to renovate and or build new schools of 220 or 230 students. We started off with around 14 different options, which included capital improvements, renovations, renovations and additions, and some new schools as well. And through what's called a feasibility study, ultimately the school building committee, based upon an overall very complicated assessment of different aspects of building and construction and educational programming needs, came down to one particular site, which is the Veterans Memorial site. It's a complicated process, and it's kind of difficult to get all the information out there. But, you know, we're looking to do as economically feasible a plan, while at the same time provide the children of Gloucester for the 21st century an excellent environment in which to learn.
Well, you know, one of the things that struck me watching this from the sidelines, and I've been part of the process 20 years ago when we were adding on and fixing up the schools, but we had neighborhood schools, and it's a challenge in a lot of communities to build or rebuild in a neighborhood because the requirements that in order to get funded exceed what's available. You don't have the space because of the neighborhoods are built out. You don't have the places are landlocked, or you have easements, or you have other issues that prevent things from happening, and that limits you. You can't just have a neighborhood school because we had one before.
Well, there's a strong sentimental attachment to neighborhood schools, and I recognize that and understand it, but when we talk about East Gloucester and veterans, approximately 60-65% of the kids that attend East Gloucester Elementary School live closer to the Veterans Memorial Elementary School. So the notion that schools are, quote, neighborhood schools is a little bit of a misnomer. Yes, it may be physically situated in a neighborhood, but when you've got kids coming from an area that's closer to a different school, it's hard to call that a neighborhood school.
Yeah, no, I understand. And the other piece of it is that every system has a life expectancy. So you put a new roof on, it's there for 10 or 20 years, then you got to put another one on. You got a boiler and it's not good for 30 or 40 years, then you got to put another one in. But schools are not, you know, something that live for 100 or 200 years. They only have a certain lifespan, and this one's... you already replaced the West Parish School, and that was built a year apart from East Gloucester. So you're overdue, really, if you look at the life expectancy of the facilities. And you get Beeman and veterans who were just the next decade built, 54 and 57, coming up behind it.
Right, Beeman and Plum Cove. Well, last Monday, I think it was last Monday, the boilers went down at East Gloucester, and for a period of time it was 49 degrees in classrooms. And DPW
went in. That's because they opened the window, right?
No, nope. Without the windows open. And they, I get your point.
Yeah.
They jumped on it. They went there and they fixed it, and it broke down again. They called an outside consultant, and fortunately, this got done in a couple of 3 hours early in the morning, so it wasn't too cold for too long. And then I received word yesterday that it shut down again. As well. So this is what we're dealing with, and I don't know that the public is aware of that. I'm not suggesting kids are freezing every day, but we're walking on eggshells that these mechanical systems, plumbing, electrical, you name it, these things can just fall apart at any time, and then where are we going to be?
I put one of those boilers in 30 years ago, so it's about had its life anyway. But.
Right. I appreciate your efforts.
Thanks. Anyway, thank you. We have to move along to our next guest. I want to wish you well as you finish out your time here in Gloucester. I still hope we see you at Rotary, and maybe we can have you back as you're transitioning your successor and talk about how that's going to play out.
Of course, and it's a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you, Dr. Sapphire.
Well, still to come, we have Amber Gomnitz, who will be talking about the 1 billion rising, and also what the new HAWK program does. And the acronym now means something different than what it did before, but basically the care is the same. And we'll also be talking a little bit about Valentine's Day, and that's coming up with Bill in just a few moments. And
Paula Curley from Senior Care.
All right, so stay tuned.
At Sylvan Street, a great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Looking to score big on your savings this season? Open a CD savings or money market account at Institution for Savings. This is the perfect time to earn funds for your future, and our rates are among the best. Stop by one of our offices in Amesbury, Beverly, Boxford, Gloucester, Hamilton, Ipswich, Middleton, Newburyport, Rockport, Rowley, Salem, Salisbury, and Topsfield. Or visit us online at institutionforsavings.com. Member FDIC, DIF. North Shore Today is MSO News Sports daily local news podcast with news from all around the North Shore. The Post also shares a note on the weather, local photos, notices, and our video of the day. Check it out daily, North Shore Today.
Welcome back to Connections. Our next guest is Paula Curley, who is the Director of Nutrition at Senior Care. Paula, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, I know that you have an event coming up, and we'll talk about that in a second, and that is for a breakfast for Valentine's Day. And then in a few minutes, I'd like to talk about the Meals on Wheels program, which this program, event sponsors or helps subsidize. So tell us about the event tomorrow.
So our event tomorrow is the Valentine Breakfast, which is held at the Gloucester House in Gloucester. The Linquater family has opened their doors and supported this fundraiser for 46 years, which is a long time. Mike Sr. Started this 46 years ago, and we've continued to have it grow to the point that, you know, we have placemat sponsors, and we do a little giveaway with a coffee mug and lots of little goodies inside. It's a fun, festive. Everyone's in a good mood, dressed for Valentine's Day. It's a businesses come, insurance companies, banks, they network. The community really comes out to support this event, and we all love it.
And if people want to come that are listening to our show, they could either buy tickets at the door or online. And the time for the event is when?
It starts at 7 and it ends at 9:30. And to get tickets online, you would go to our website, which is www.seniorcareinc.org, and you click on events, and it will bring you to the breakfast, and you can purchase tickets online or definitely at the door.
And you have some kids from Gloucester High, students from Gloucester High School that are, well, I think, part of the JROTC program that help out. Tell me about that.
They do. We work with them each year. They send about 20, 25 cadets from the Junior ROTC. They help serve. They help. We do raffles, so they help sell raffle tickets. They bus tables. They pour juice and interact with our guests. It's like I said, it's a community event, so people just, you know, you come and go. So it's not a formal event fundraiser. We have tables set for 10, and people sit. You chat with the people on the table with you. So it's a really nice networking community event.
So Meals on Wheels, I know about the program, but please explain it to us. I know that I was obviously we talked before you were on the show. I was impressed with the number of meals that you folks serve on a daily basis and on an annual basis. Can you share those numbers with us and tell us about the program, the different communities that you serve, and so forth?
Sure. So we serve close to 600 meals a day. Our catchment area is the 9 communities between Topsfield and Rockport. So we hit Beverly, Essex, Hamilton, Ipswich, Manchester, Gloucester, Rockport, Topsfield, and Wenham. We have Meals on Wheels drivers that go out into the community every day delivering the meals, and then we also have seniors that come to the different luncheon sites and have lunch. Meals on Wheels, we don't charge for Meals on Wheels. The criteria would be that you're over 60, you're homebound, and you don't, you can't prepare a well-balanced meal on a regular basis. We don't charge, but we do ask for a donation. And, you know, when we say it's more than meal, you know, it's somebody that has a watchful eye on your loved one. They're a friendly visitor, a little bit of a safety check. And, you know, some of our consumers say that at times they're the only person, our driver is the person they see in the course of a day. So that's really rewarding to the driver.
And one of the benefits that you mentioned to me when we talked earlier was the driver, I mean, the person brings the meal. If nobody answers the door or there's a miscue somewhere, they didn't get to deliver the meal, there's a check and balance system. So somebody from your agency calls the next person, the contact person, to just say, hey, we tried to deliver a meal and they weren't there. Is everything okay?
Yeah, so our consumers know that they need to be homebound and home waiting for the meals, and they're really good at letting us know when they're not going to be there. And we try most of the time. If they're not home, you know, we'll notify, we'll give them a call, and if they're not there, we'll leave a message with their emergency contact to let them know that we did try to deliver and, you know, they weren't there today, and we're just checking to make sure that, you know, everything's okay. And, you know, from there, their contact will try to track them down and at least know that they didn't get lunch today. So we're a little bit of a watchful eye on them that is, you know, really reassuring to a lot of family members that are not in close contact with their elders. So if they live out of town, if they're at work all day, we have somebody that at least is saying, hi, how are you today? How's your day going? And here's your lunch.
Great. And over the course of a year, you said between 550 and 600 meals a day. So I don't know if that's every day or is that just Monday through Friday. But over the course of a year, how much does it do?
Oh, so in the course of a year, our home delivered program delivers about 135,000 meals a year. So that's quite a lot of meals going out there.
Well, we wish you the very best in your fundraising event tomorrow. Again, that's at the Gloucester House between 7 and 9:30. It's to benefit the Meals on Wheels program. People can buy tickets at the door for $15 or online at the Senior Care website. Paula, thank you so much for being a guest and telling us about your program and about this important fundraiser in the community.
Thank you, and we hope to see everyone there tomorrow, and happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day to you.
This is Connections on MSONewsSports.com.
Anthony Migliaccio is joining us from Salvi the Florist in Lynn and in Swampscott. And Anthony, great to see you and great to be talking with you.
Great to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, Valentine's Day, you walk in your store, it is red, obviously, for Valentine's Day, right?
Yes, a lot of red, a little bit of white, a little bit of pink, but for the most part, it's red.
So tell us, I mean, you are incredibly busy right now here. We're day before Valentine's Day, more or less, here. And so what is it like? Is this the busiest time of year for you?
It is probably the busiest, 24 hours you can really have. Mother's Day can be pretty busy, but it's like kind of a whole week. But Valentine's Day is really just it's just one big, big day. It's about 24 hours with obviously a lot of prep leading up to that particular day.
So who are your customers? Are they more male or more female?
Mostly male.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And when they come in, what do they say?
I need flowers. That's pretty much it.
When I look around a place like this, this is a business that it's an incredible business because your inventory, you can't keep your inventory for long here because it's flowers.
Absolutely, yeah. If flowers are a perishable good, so you have to be able to bring in stuff quickly and move it out quickly. So it's a really kind of a balancing act with when you're bringing stuff in from the wholesalers, when we process them here, and get them on the trucks to their recipients.
So, other than roses, what else is big on Valentine's Day?
Lilies are probably the second most common flower. Roses, though, are pretty much the dominant flower for everything.
So where do roses come from this time of year to Salvi's?
A lot come from South America. We find that most of the best flowers and roses especially come from areas in South America through certain farms that we go through.
So by the time folks hear this will be Thursday. So what are folks' deadlines? I mean, I imagine you're going to be very busy right on Valentine's Day itself.
If you haven't prepared yourself for this day, we will be open very late at our Western Avenue store. We've been known to stay open until midnight, 1 o'clock, for people coming in. We don't really close this place until there are no more people.
It's like tax season, right, where they keep the post office sometimes open till midnight on tax day, right? Yeah.
Our job is to sell flowers, and when people need flowers, we want to be there for them.
Any good stories off of Valentine's Day over the years? There must be some stories of folks coming into the store.
Absolutely. Probably the funniest things that really come in are when there's a store just packed with people, and you have somebody coming in for, they have a baby shower in April that they want to discuss, and then they're looking around, but they don't seem very concerned that there's that many people in the store. So we usually politely tell them to come back in a few days. But usually those are the things that, at least in shop talk, those are pretty much the funny stuff. I mean, you have people, love does crazy things, so you can imagine all the types of things that go on in the shop here.
Oh, I can imagine that, but that is a great point. I mean, how often does that happen to folks? I mean, a girl walks in, she has her wedding 8 months from now, but she just got engaged and she wants to stop by on Valentine's Day.
It happens every year. At least one person comes. I mean, even today, it happened already. So, it just happens. Some people just, if you're not in the business and you're not in the know, you're just kind of going about your day, but then... they walk in and it's crazy in here.
or a guy walks in with a microphone. Just as annoying, I'm sure.
No, well, this is wonderful. I'm really glad you came in.
Anthony, great meeting you. Best of luck and have a great Valentine's Day here at Salvi's.
Thank you so much.
Joining us from Salvi the Florist in Lynn and in Swampscott continues just ahead here on MSONewsSports.com.
Oh, man. Bill, that was that was great. I can't imagine. It's true. I mean, you know, someone gets engaged and you're thinking, oh, okay, Valentine's Day, we'll go make our arrangements for our arrangements. I had no idea. Do you have your Valentine's cards ready? Card or cards?
They're after I leave here today.
I'm in the same boat. I'll be heading downtown to see what I can find, you know, like a $97 Hallmark card. But there is a lot of stuff going on. Do you guys go out to dinner or anything like that?
In past we have or done something. I don't know what's on the docket this week, but we'll figure something out.
God, I am so nuts and bolts non-romantic. It's embarrassing. And the thing is, a few years ago, and I don't want to put a crimp in the restaurants at all because they're fantastic, and you just heard what Paula was saying about what's going on at the Gloucester House. Gloucester House also has a special tomorrow, a special menu. It's a pretty extensive menu. Some of these menus are really shortened when you go to these places, but a few years ago, I think it was Mother's Day. In fact, it was more than a few years ago now. We took our mothers out to dinner, and we were so disappointed because we didn't have forenotice that the menu was shortened, and my mother in particular was looking for something. It's a restaurant that's out of town that she was savoring at this particular restaurant,
yeah,
and it wasn't available. So we kind of stopped doing that. But I generally go with flowers, there are many florists about town, and gentlemen especially are sort of reticent. They are wont to put this off and not do well with this day. So head to your florist, head to the cards. Ooh.
My family used to have a florist shop, so I remember this.
Okay.
Having a run around and in what those days were like.
Well, it reminded me of the most astounding birthday present I ever got when I heard you know, you talking with Paula and Bill talking Salvi's florist there, and I think it was my 49th or 50th birthday. Wife drove me to Beverly Airport, and her co-pilot was an F-4 pilot. He's a flight instructor. He was. And there was this warbird over there that does acrobatics and so on. And I thought I was going to get to fly in that as a passenger to do, you know, loopity-loops and stuff like that. And I was really excited. And we walked right past the plane. I said, well, what are we doing? And she actually bought me flying lessons because I wanted to fly my whole life. Mm. And I never thought to do that. And it was just the most astounding gift. And it was amazing. And another one, I taught a class once, and the teachers in the class were saying, you really need to come up with a wow gift for your wife. And I haven't been able to do, you know, msonewsports@gmail.com. There we go. You can email me at msonewsports@gmail.com with some wow ideas
I'll give you an idea.
Well,
I did this for her birthday, and I had her, I got four or five different gifts, but it was like a treasure hunt. So she got a card, and she had to go to this particular store,
okay,
and they had a card waiting for her what the next stop
was. That is cool.
That's
way cool. Way cool. Another one I got was Seiji Ozawa's, I'm putting myself in a hole, Seiji Ozawa's last season at the Boston Symphony, and my wife gave me a birthday present of concert tickets to his final concert. It was Beethoven. I just love Beethoven. I don't know. Maybe someone will send some ideas along. That's a great one that you have. Well, coming up, we will be talking with Amber Gomnitz. She is an advocate who works at Healing Abuse Working for Change, HAWC, H-A-W-C, in Gloucester. And I got all tongue-tied when this interview. I got very nervous about it, and I don't know why. It was just a very, not that Amber wasn't a great interview, she was, but it was a very difficult interview for me, and the statistics are astounding in this interview, and we will talk with Amber about it. I also would like to read an article from the Gloucester High School paper. It's called the Gilnetter, and they do a great job over there at Gloucester High School. Mama T, Kim Trigilio, is the faculty advisor. She has done a fantastic job. But I want to read this because it relates to talking with Amber. This Valentine's Day, the activist organization 1 Billion Rising is holding its sixth annual $1 Billion Rising event at City Hall in Gloucester in support of survivors of gendered violence. The event will be held at the Kairos Auditorium today, I think, at 5 p.m. That I'm trying to find that exact date, but it's in the interview. Yeah. We continue. $1 Billion Rising is an organization that attempts to draw attention to the one in three women, one in three, who will be sexually assaulted or beaten in their lifetimes. Give survivors a feeling of community and advocate for legislation that protects the safety of women and girls. Amber Gomnitz, a Gloucester resident, member of the Healing Abuse Working for Change, HAWC, team, expresses the prevalence of the issue. Quote, one in four women will be assaulted by an intimate partner in her lifetime. $1 Billion Rising was created to try to call attention to those horrifying statistics and say no more. I will no longer abide by this violence against women, unquote. HAWC, along with the Coalition for the Prevention of Domestic Violence, the North Shore Rape Crisis Center, the Gloucester Police Department, and Gloucester Mayor Safathia Romeo Taken, is partnering with $1 Billion Rising to organize the Day of Dancing speeches and solidarity. Gomnitz is again quoted as saying, we're actually trying this year to focus on the additional risks in immigrant communities, and we have two speakers, both women of color, who are going to talk about how immigrant women are at additional risk. $1 Billion Rising hopes to create an environment in which survivors feel safe and optimistic. The event will involve the organization's official dance performance choreographed by choreographer, actor, and producer Debbie Allen. Again, quoting Gomnitz, oftentimes these kinds of events are somber and grave. We want this to be more about rising together and raising our voices. We want to bring these things out into the light. We want survivors to know that they're not alone. So instead of quoting Amber, we're going to talk with Amber in just a second. We need to take one more break, and please pay attention to this. It is of import. One other thing I want to mention, there's an update from Channel 5 about the event going on in Newburyport, the explosions up there. Firefighters were met with explosions Thursday morning when they responded to a hazmat situation at a chemical company. Crews were called, and I'm reading from the WCVB website, crews were called at 4:30 a.m. At 9 Opportunity Way. Firefighters encountered smoke when they arrived, and they met the employees inside. Three more explosions happened as they were there. The building was evacuated. Officials declared a Tier 2 hazmat situation. And apparently this is still ongoing. No one reported to be injured, thank goodness. So again, that's up in Newburyport at Opportunity Way, so you might want to check the traffic situation up there. But again, the important thing, no injuries. We'll take a break, and we'll come back. We'll talk to Amber Gomnitz of HAWC. This is Collections. It's Connections, although I guess we could be Collections. Yeah. Why not? All right. So we'll be right back. You're listening to MSONewsSports.com. I'm Rick Moore, along with Josh Arnold and Bill Newell.
You'll love the Bradford Tavern in Rowley, as they feature everyone. Start your meal with your choice from a dozen delicious appetizers. There are also soups and fresh salads. Dinner selections include burgers, sirloin tips, chicken parmesan, chicken piccata, and then there's seafood, clams, haddocks, salmon, lobsters, and fish tacos. Plus a wide selection of sandwiches and wraps. Let the Bradford Tavern host your events or functions set in unique spaces. Open 6 days a week, Tuesday through Sunday. The Bradford Tavern, Route 133 Rowley and BradfordTavern.com.
Back now with Amber Gomnitz of the Gloucester HAWC office and an advocate for those involved in trying to prevent abuse and violence among women and so on, and families, I guess it is, if I get it straight here. Amber, I'm all tongue-tied here, so let me...
No worries.
Let me get to you.
We're here to try to support survivors, and we work with women, men, who have experienced violence within their interpersonal lives.
Right, and originally this was, I know it was a healing abuse against women, but now it's an entire family thing and for everyone. So first of all, why don't we start there? Tell us a little bit about the Gloucester HAWC office, because I know that it's been in effect for a while. You know, we see the signs, basically we see the publicity during parades, but you guys do so much more than that. So tell us a little bit about the Gloucester office.
Okay, so HAWC, which was helping abused women and children, we changed our acronym several years ago to Healing Abuse Working for Change, obviously because we wanted to serve our entire population and not just specifically women.
And we are an organization that has existed for 41 years, and we have had a presence in the Gloucester office for 15 to 20 years. I'm sorry, I don't have the exact detail. But the services we are providing fall under a couple different categories. So one is direct service, where we are meeting directly with clients and meeting them where they're at and trying to build into their lives put things in place so that they can have safer lives. So that may look like just us having conversations and talking about what they've been through so they can put it in words and then they can start taking action, or it may be referring to outside parties more along the line of case management, so be that therapist, be it police, be it therapy.
That's okay.
So we're referring out, so even food stamps or even the Grace Center, wherever we think that clients that we work with may be able to find more services to help increase safety in their lives. We also have advocates that work in the courts to help people get orders of protection from people that are harming them. And so even when they are putting in a motion for a restraining order and help them write their affidavit, help them through that process, and then stand up with them when they go before the judge. So that's another piece of our services. We also have legal clinics internally that clients can access when they need to talk about what an order of protection might how it might impact them legally, but also how it might impact a family. So if there needs to be a separation agreement, visitation, custody, child support, what have you, we try to provide some guidance and legal assistance around those issues. We don't have the ability to provide representation for our clients, but we want to try to get them prepared and ready for when they may need to secure legal representation. And then another piece of our work is support groups. And we don't currently have support groups in the Gloucester office, but we do have them in the Salem and Lynn office. And support groups start up maybe every other month and then run from 6 to 8 weeks. And it's working on domestic violence, looking at red flags, cycles of violence, coping skills, and really trying to provide solidarity and support for those individuals who can share those experiences with other people who have had similar challenges and traumas in their lives. And lastly, we have a recovery program that we are working in collaboration with Children, Friends, and Family Services. And that is a program where we are working to rebuild the trust between the protective parent and the child who has experienced or witnessed domestic violence.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. How did you get involved in this to begin with, Amber, yourself?
So my background is public health, actually. So it was a big shift. So I was working in international public health, a lot on maternal child health abroad. But then a couple of years ago, I realized I really wanted to be anchored in my community and really supporting my community. And also I wanted to be available to spend more time with my son instead of commuting to Boston and flying around the world. So here I am. But I really do think looking at this country and really knowing what's going on and how many people are suffering, those of us who can get to work need to get to work.
Unbelievable. I took a course many years ago when I was working on my master's plus 60. I was a math teacher, but I took a course on violence against children. And at that time, and it was in, I think it was in the early to mid-90s, and at that time, the statistic that absolutely knocked my socks off was something around the effect that a child, one in seven children, would be subject to abuse or violence sometimes in their childhood. And I hate to say it, but looking when I was researching how to get a hold of Hawk and 1 Billion Rising and so on, it doesn't look like the statistics have improved.
So with child abuse, I don't actually have that data in front of me, but the 1 in 7 statistic does not surprise me at all. I would not be surprised if it was higher than that. But the statistic we use for women is 1 in 3 women will be physically or sexually assaulted in her lifetime.
That's not possible. That's crazy.
1 in 3.
That's crazy. Is that United States or worldwide, or what is that?
globally.
Oh, my
so,
God.
So, yes, definitely in the United States, but
oh, Lord.
Globally.
So
that is, that's why we have this event, which is called 1 Billion Rising, mm-hmm. which is really to raise awareness about violence against women. And the 1 billion comes from the fact that there are over 6 billion people in the world. So that 1 in 3 statistic translates to over a billion women who have been assaulted in her lifetime.
Oh, my God. It's breathtaking. It's absolutely breathtaking. And is there, and I hesitate to ask this because it's a very difficult question, and obviously you can just say, forget about it. Are there success stories that, obviously without getting to names or families or anything like that, but are there success stories who and been involved with 1 Billion Rising, you know, come more help and have been able to get the help and to resume or gain, you know, a meaningful and normal, healthful lifestyle?
So obviously there are so many different stories, and people take what they can or what they need from their interaction with Hawk and with the community, but I definitely have clients that I am unbelievably impressed with,
mm-hmm.
the amount of hard work they've done, the amount of putting one foot in front of their other until they have a safer life for them and their children. Again, obviously for confidentiality reasons, I can't give any names or any particular details, but I do have a woman that I've worked with for over a year who had a fiance who physically assaulted her and threatened her, and she went to the court to get order of protection, and there she engaged with our legal advocate, and the legal advocate referred her to our offices for direct service, and she blows me away. Every day I'm just impressed with how much she's willing to just keep walking through the nonsense to get to a safe place for her and her child.
That is great, and it's gratifying to hear. Does Hawk get involved, or with other programs, or other you know, like police and first responders and so on? That, in other words, do you get help from the community? I guess is what I'm trying to ask.
Yes, we have a very close relationship with the Gloucester Police Department. We have an officer who is the point person for domestic violence in town. His name is Ron Piscatella. He is a gem. I'm so happy that I have him to work with. He just has so much compassion and so much understanding for what this work is. And our new chief, Conley, he is very, very supportive as well. He has come and spoke at our event at Take Back the Night, and he has come to the Gloucester Coalition for Prevention of Domestic Abuse. Like, he really has tried to get the word out that he and all of the people working under him are 100% behind preventing violence in our community.
This is the
thing. Yes, we work very closely with the police department.
Mm-hmm. This is an interview that I have to we've got to continue at some other point. I have to come visit and get more information so that we can help and do our job. But obviously, 1 Billion Rising, let's focus on that. And then let me ask you about how people can get help who are in need.
Okay. So 1 Billion Rising is an event that we are going to hold tomorrow, which is February 13th at 5 p.m. at City Hall in the auditorium. And as I said, the 1 Billion is part of the name is derived from the fact that because of the 6 billion people in the world, the 1 in 3 statistic equates to 1 billion women who will be assaulted in her lifetime. So what our event is really raising awareness, so recognizing that is the situation, facing into the truth, and standing up and saying no more. So it really is a time to come together to say to survivors they're not alone, that we hear them, that we trust them, that we believe them, and that we're in this with them.
And in terms of someone who was in need of help, obviously, you know, you mentioned the word confidentiality, and when someone what is the best way? Sometimes it's a friend who's able to help and reach out for someone who's in need. What's the best way to do it?
So I'd say probably one of the best first steps would be call the hotline, the 24-hour hotline. And that number is 1-800-547-1649.
Okay.
And we have people standing by 24 hours that can take a call and help someone talk through that initial conversation about what is going on, what the risk is, and then help connect them to services. So then the next step would be to call probably our main office, but of course you can also call the Gloucester office. And the main office number is 978-744-8552.
Mm-hmm.
And the individual would then ask to schedule an intake with a domestic violence advocate.
Oh, my gosh. This is okay. Is there anything else, in this interview that you'd like to mention and any other way that that people can help? Because given the climate in this country, people have a hard time getting along with each other, period, sometimes in talking politics. And this is so much more serious than that, that I just can't imagine that here in the 21st century this kind of stuff goes on. And thank goodness for what you people do. So for now, Amber, is there anything else that you'd like to mention?
Yeah, I mean, just to reemphasize, the action people can take, the most important action is listening to survivors, trusting survivors, and believing survivors. That's where we have to start.
Okay.
So many of these stories come forward and people question where the truth lies, and we don't have time for that. You know, we need to be able to meet these survivors where they are at and support them in their process of healing and moving forward.
Gloucester Hawk Office. Well, that was an important interview, I think, a very important interview, and we hope that you will support that, and I'll connect to Hawk and other agencies as well on the website. So I want to thank all of our guests this morning. It was an informative morning, as we what do you call this? Valentine's Eve, I guess it is. Valentine's Eve. All right, there you go. Yeah, I want to thank Josh and his guest, Dr. Richard Sapphire, also Senior Care Coordinator Paula Curley, and also, of course, to Amber Gomnitz of Gloucester's Hawk Program, and to Anthony Migliaccio from Salvi the Florist in Lynn and Swampscott, and, of course, to Bill Newell. So we will have our next program on Tuesday. At least it's scheduled at 10 a.m. We've got some... we will have some guests lined up. We want current events. We want to talk current events and what's important about things that are going on in the North Shore. So please drop us an email at msonewsports@gmail.com or
joshonald@verizon.net.
Yeah, and send along your opinions and stuff like that. Let us know. Also, Bill Newell has a really big, important sports report and sports videos up on the website from last night's game, the NEC Boys Basketball Showdown. Lynn English over Beverly, you want to take a look at that with the interviews. And also, we have our scoreboard. Bill put that up from all of the scores in the in the region in high school action. And, of course, we have a report from the Essex Tech Rockport hockey game last night that I was at as well. And stay tuned. You know, check things out because we will be broadcasting more games as we head into the tournament season. So I think that takes care of it. I do want to wish everyone a happy and safe Valentine's Day, and gentlemen, good luck if you haven't gotten something for your partner. Go for it, man. And I say gentlemen because we're the ones usually lagging behind.
Right.
You know, and
yeah, they already have the cards picked out.
Okay. Right. And among our guests next week, I can tell you that Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith will be on board as well. So that's it from here. We've got other things lined up. Please check out our website. Spread the word. It's MSO News Sports. This is Connections. We're doing this on Tuesdays and Thursdays live from 10 to 11. And, of course, then it's available as a podcast in perpetuity after that. On behalf of Josh Arnold, Bill Newell, and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, I'm Rick Moore. Good day.